Many years ago, my father handed over the family business to me. It was a bit shocking at the time because, you see, I have these brothers, and they were a little bit wiser and better suited for the task, and to be honest, they were first in line, so it came as a bit of a shock. But you see, my mom and a family friend worked behind the scenes to kind of arrange for me to take over. I guess you can say sometimes it's good to be a mama's boy. So there I was, a young man in the prime of his life taking over this family business, and many people didn't think I'd live up to my father. My father was a bit of a legend. He was a great leader. He was an incredible guy, but many thought that I would never be able to live into his shoes. But in a turn of events, I did remarkably well. You know, most children, when they inherit a family business like I inherited, well, they have a chance of squandering it all, but not me. No, I took to the task. I put my whole heart into it, and I did quite well. Now, it's true. Many people will say my father, David, did great things. But I'm the one who built the temple. I'm the one who arranged all of the commerce and trading to go through Israel. I'm the one who made Israel into the wealthiest nation in history. Sure, they say of my father, he forged this nation. But after I'm gone, they'll say, but Solomon refined it. Solomon is the reason why people travel from all over the world to marvel at all we've accomplished. Solomon is what made our nation into what it is today. Forgive me. I have a habit of getting ahead of myself. I should have started with an introduction. You're all probably wondering who I am. My name is Solomon, King Solomon, as a matter of fact. I'm the third king of Israel. And I'm just passing through here. I'm on a bit of a retreat. I'm working on a little short scroll that I'm writing. To be honest, I think I may have planned my retreat at the wrong time of year to travel to the Valley of the Sun. It's a little bit hot, if you ask me. I thought Israel was hot in the middle of summer, but my goodness, it's as hot as a camel's back in Sinai around here. So to be honest, I haven't gotten as much writing done as I would have liked, but that's okay. Because it's given me time to reflect and to think. You see, now that I'm coming to the end of my time as king, you might think to yourself, Solomon, you don't look that old. How can you be coming to the end of your time? Well, let me let you in on a little secret. It's not all natural, if you get what I'm saying. Now that I'm coming to the end of my time as king, I thought, I need to do something. I need to write something down to pass on to the next generation. I want to inspire people. So what I'm writing is not so much a tome or a treaty. It's a sermon. I want to inspire the next generation of Israel. I want to help them grow in their relationship and their commitment with the Lord. I want to write something that will act as a compass for them through life. More than that, I want to give them something that will act like tent pegs that will hold them fast through the storms of life. Because you see, I know something about storms. I've had some very difficult days. Sure, I know a lot about wealth and success. But I also know what wealth can't buy you. And I know what success and achievement won't satisfy. I know what it's like to walk through some very dark storms. And I know what it's like to work your tail off only to feel like you're chasing after the wind. So, do me a favor. Listen to the first lines of my sermon. Tell me what you think. Vanity of vanities. All is vanity. Another day goes, and another day comes. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does it really benefit a man if he toils under the sun? Catchy, right? It's good, right? And I know what some of you might be thinking, but Solomon, that's so pessimistic. That's so dull and dreary. I've heard it before. My wife told me the same thing. At least one of them did. I can't remember which one exactly. Is it Shayna? Sarah, I have 300, so it's kind of hard to keep track. I won't even get into the concubines. So I know. It sounds a bit cynical, but hear me out. Here's the deal. When you lived a life like I've lived, and you've experienced the world like I've experienced, then you begin to realize if this life and this world is all there is, then truly, at the end of the day, all of it is vanity. It's all futile. It's meaningless. It's hollow. Because at the end of the day, we all end up in the same place, don't we? Rich or poor, wise or foolish, we're all destined to go to the same place, and none of us can take the things we've accumulated with us. So it's all meaningless. Sure, some of us might have a good time while we wait to get there, but at the end, we're all the same. It's all vanity. Unless you're able to discover the key to the meaning of life. A key that I once knew very well. Shamefully and unfortunately, I lost that key for a long season in my life, but thankfully, I found it again. I've rediscovered it just before I go and meet my Maker. And I want others to discover this key. I want others to have it, and I don't want them to waste as much time as I wasted chasing after vain and shallow pursuits. So, what's the mystery? What's the key? Well, what I've come to discover is that the meaning of life is not found in success or wealth, which many think that's where it's found. It's not found in great accomplishments. It's not found in acquiring vast amounts of knowledge and wisdom. It's not found in the right spouse or having perfect children. In fact, in all my years, I've come to realize that last one is not so much a vain pursuit as it is a complete myth. You can't find meaning there. Not that those things are bad. No. Not that those things are evil. By no means. But you can't build your meaning and your value and your life's worth upon things that are under the heaven. Nothing under the heavens will give our life significance or meaning. So what exactly is this secret, right? It's simple. And yet too many of us miss it. Don't look under the heavens to find significance and value. But cast your eyes above the heaven to find value and meaning in this world. Everything under heaven is temporary and fleeting. Everything above the heavens, well, that's unwavering and eternal. Everything under the heaven is simply a gift from God, from the great gift giver. But the gifts are temporal. Only the gift giver is eternal. When we try to find our significance and value in the things that are temporal, we'll be let down. Only the thing that is eternal can give us that. Only the thing that's eternal can give us what our hearts truly long for. Yes, the great gift giver gives us these things and he wants us to enjoy them. But unless we're in a relationship with him, we'll never truly appreciate those gifts he gives us. In fact, when we're in a relationship with him, that's when we can fully appreciate the gifts he's given us. But those gifts will never satisfy the heart. It's as if our hearts, how do I put this? It's as if our hearts were created with eternity set within them. As if there's a hole in our hearts that only God can fulfill. That's good. Hold on one second. Let me just write that. I'll remember it later. You see, I'm not a cynic. I'm not a skeptic. I'm a realist. I'm a person who's come to discover that even though I have grand and glorious homes, even though I have more money than I could spend in 10 lifetimes, even though I've achieved at most of what I set out to accomplish, even though I'm respected and admired by all, what I've come to discover in the final analysis is this: my greatest treasure is my faith in God. And it's a treasure in which you can own as well. And it's the greatest treasure because it's what connects us to the great gift giver. It's what connects us to what our hearts are truly longing after. It's what gives our life meaning and allows us to appreciate the things of life. So, while my opening words do sound a bit dour and down, I'm really not against good things. In fact, as I say in my sermon, if God gives you a good day, enjoy it. If he gives you good food, eat up. If he gives you a nice bottle of wine, have a way with it. But don't forget to share with your friends, especially your new ones, right? But above all, don't put those things where only the gift giver belongs. Keep the gift giver at the center of your faith and your focus. That's how we find meaning. But now, I know what some of you might be thinking. But Solomon, life's not full of just good gifts. There are some really bad gifts out there. What about the storms of life you were talking about? What about those dark days? Where's the good gift giver then? I'm sure all of us have experienced a lot of injustice and chaos and dark days in this world. Some of us may have experienced it firsthand and unjustly experienced it firsthand. And we think, where's the good gift giver then? How am I supposed to find meaning when it's not all good gifts, but it's also bad gifts? Well, that's actually the great part about this key to life. Placing our faith and our hope in God above and not on the things below doesn't just allow us to appreciate the good things in this life, but it also allows us to maintain perspective when we face those dark days. It allows us to keep our head above waters when the storms arise. I hear you all know a thing or two about storms. Something happened last night? Now, truth be told, I've spent my entire life pursuing wisdom and knowledge. And I'll be honest with you, I still cannot understand why it is that God sometimes gives us good gifts and other times it feels like he's out to get us. In fact, in my sermon, I put it like this. Here's one thing that makes no sense. The righteous get what the wicked deserve and the wicked get what the righteous deserve. Who can understand it? The answer, no one. Nobody can comprehend what goes on under the sun. Despite all of our efforts to search it out, no one can comprehend what God does. But you know what I've come to discover in my time here on earth? It's not our job to try to comprehend what God's doing or what God is thinking. We're just simply to trust in him. Here's how I put it in the sermon. Because I trust him, and because I know he is good and I know he is in control, then when the days are good, I can be happy. But when the days are bad, well, those are the days I can remember that God is the one who made both. And it's not my job to make sense of it. I'm simply to trust God, knowing he is good and righteous and in control. And I can trust him, and I can know he is good and righteous because I've built a relationship with him. I've spent time with him. And you can build that same relationship. You can have that same kind of trust. And so when it seems like things are out of control, when it seems like this world is chaotic and injustice is prevailing, you can have calm through the storms. Life can still have meaning, even when it's not all good gifts. And we can face the dark days just as well as we face the light ones. So what's the final analysis, Solomon, right? Come on, wrap it up already, Bubba. Well, here's what I'll say. In this life of ours, to find meaning and value and purpose, I think it comes down to two things. First, fear God. And second, do what he says. We could summarize it as that. Sure, God wants us to live our lives to the full hilt. Sure, God wants us to live with abandon. But we're to live it responsibly. We're to remember he's in control. We're to keep our faith focused on him. And we're to find our meaning not in the gifts he gives us, but in our relationship with him. In fact, that's how we enjoy the gifts he gives us. That's how we weather through the storms of life. That's how we stand firm when trouble comes our way. We'll never make sense of why we get good gifts some days and not so good gifts the other days, but that's not our job. Our job is simply to trust God and let him be God. And that's okay by me. So what do I say? What can man do to me? What can this earth do to me? The answer, absolutely nothing when my eyes are fixed on the Lord. In light of all the perplexities and meaninglessness of life, we can trust that God is sovereign, good, and in control, and that faith, by faith, we can trust what we cannot trace. By faith, we can step where we cannot see, and by faith, we can undergo what we may never understand. Well, I've got to wrap up. I've taken up too much of your time. I need to go finish this sermon of mine. But I want to thank you for listening. It's helped me to process some things. When I'm done with my sermon, I'll leave you a copy. I encourage you to check it out. I'll leave a copy in those chairs that you're sitting in. I'll flush out some of these details you may be thinking about later. But I want to leave you on one final thought. Vanity of vanity. All is vanity. Unless you fix your faith and your eyes on the God who is above. Thank you.